Hi, everybody. Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm Karen Spies, and I'm here today with Andrea Sadler. She is known as Dragonfly. She's a transformational coach, filmmaker, and spiritual guide who's devoted to the awakening of human potential and the remembrance of our divine essence. Andrea weaves the sacred threads of art, storytelling, energy healing, and ancient wisdom. It's a lot of threads. To guide others home to the truth of who they are. Through her dragonfly coaching circles and retreats and Luminous Dragonfly Society, I assume that's a community that you started. Yeah.
Membership, yeah.
All right, we'll get into that. She leads journeys of transformation that help people embody their soul, expand their consciousness, and align with the heart of Gaia and the source of creation. Her documentary, The Sacred Run, The Lotus and the Feather, and her children's book, The Magical, Wonderful Bulbul Bird, carry messages of peace, unity, and wonder, inviting us to awaken our shared light and purpose. Please open your hearts and welcome the radiant and inspiring Andrea Sadler, Dragonfly.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you so much for inviting me to this.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, how's your day? Good?
My day's been great, and I took in a nap because this weather makes me tired, so I had a nice nap before meeting you. So
you look very enlivened with your matching red.
Thank you.
Background.
Thank you.
I love color. How did you evolve into becoming this like very spiritually oriented coach? I'm assuming you didn't start out like that.
Actually, right. I did. I started out, I've been spiritual my whole life, even since childhood. But becoming a professional transformational coach, working as a professional coach, came about later. When I was younger, I've always been interested in psychology, what makes people tick, how do you grow, how do you learn about yourself, how do you become self-empowered, self-realized, how do you become enlightened? And it began my journey, but I started more in the arts. As a filmmaker, I was an actress, a filmmaker, singer, songwriter.
Okay, let's not gloss over these. Those are all amazing.
Thank you.
Tell us first, singer, songwriter. We'll go backward to front.
Yeah. So the singing, I've sang my whole life since I was like 7 years old, and music was a way to comfort myself. But then. Later in my life, I just continued playing. And then I think it was later in my 30s, I sang in a band and I did the coffee house circuit. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I was also finishing a documentary film that I had shot in Japan. And then I had been living in Japan for 3 years. And while I was in Japan, I studied taiko drumming as well. And I would play my music at festivals. I'd sing.
Like a true multi-passionate. Wow.
I am a Renaissance woman.
What?
And then when I was, so while I was in Japan, I was doing that all. And then I wanted to make a film while I was teaching English, but my goal was to pursue my creative goals, which was to make a film. And, you know, I studied pottery. I love to be creative.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If I could just make art all the time, I'd be happy. But there's this other part of me that is really wants to make a difference in the world and help people evolve and grow and heal. And so I was inspired to make this documentary film called The Sacred Run, The Lotus and the Feather, while I was living in Japan, because I heard that there were indigenous people coming to run 4,000 kilometers across Japan for peace and environmental awareness. And there were 80 people from 14 countries who joined the run from age 2 to 72.
Wow.
And we ran from Hokkaido to Hiroshima and Nagasaki to carry the message that all life is sacred. And on the way of making the film, I'm like, while we're shooting, while we're running, I was also playing my guitar and singing and writing songs to perform at cultural events.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just what I love to do. And that became like, you know, when I came back to Montreal after to do the post-production of the film, I thought, well, maybe I can, you know, have a career as a singer-songwriter. And it started out that way. The producer of Men Without Hats came to see me and he said I had something and he wanted to hear more. But then what I realized is that to finish my documentary, and I was also pursuing acting and getting acting gigs and auditioning. And
did you sleep? Did you sleep?
No, actually, while I was in the final post-production of my film, it's funny you say that because literally I had a deadline for my film was the closing film of the Terre en Vue Festival in Montreal. It's an Indigenous Peoples Film Festival. And I had to finish it. So I slept 3 hours a night while I was doing that.
Really, I've edited before. I understand.
Yeah. And the whole editing process took me 9 months. I worked 10 hours a day on that for 9 months.
Editing is so hard. It's less hard now, but yeah.
I love it, but it's, I worked on an Avid, but I started on a Steenbeck. So I shot on 16mm film.
Right.
But I thank goodness the Avid came about and digital, because I wanted to make a lyrical film with lots of layers and treat the film like a painting. Mm-hmm. And on the Steenbeck, you can only see one image at a time, and you got to visualize it and tell the lab how to do it, you know, and all the layers you want. So it was really a good timing to get that digital access for the film. But I realized that, okay, acting, singing, making the film, something's got to go. I can't finish my film unless I focus, and I needed to get to the finish line. So I put the music on the back burner, and I'm still a professional actress, but the music went more to the back burner. Even though I sang in a band during that time, it was still something I thought, okay, you're not going to put out an album now. You're going to finish your film, and hopefully later you'll finish your, well, back then I was thinking CDs, of course.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it took me everything to finish my film, and I did. And then when I came to, then I moved to New York. I met my husband at the Clearwater Festival, and we're at Pete Seeger. I don't know if you know Pete Seeger.
Sure, I know Pete Seeger is, of course.
Yeah. So it was an environmental and peace festival.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was showing my film there, and I was volunteering at the Environmental Action Tent, which has always been my other passion, is how do we live in balance on this earth, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so I went to that, and then I met my husband at the festival, and I had never been married. I was 42. And so suddenly my focus was all about getting to know him, and he lived here. I lived in Canada. And then we got married in 2006. And then my focus was all about having babies. How do I, I want to have babies. And I was older, so it was challenging.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, okay, now I'm going to support my husband and do my thing on the side and act and promote my film. But then I decided that I needed to do something more meaningful, because acting and filmmaking wasn't generating enough income.
Right. But I could see from your description, I can see that there's a thread that's running through. It seems like all of your projects, you're very focused on environmentalism. You're very focused on Indigenous experience. You're very focused on that's the spiritual little thread. I think that even as you're describing it, I've never seen your film. I don't know your songs, but it sounds like you are always doing that all along, just in different wrappers.
Exactly. And even before that, when I was 29, I went to India for 6 months by myself on a spiritual journey, where I studied Vipassana and I began a meditation practice. And I started having, I had a Kundalini awakening, and I perceived my toroidal field being activated. Like I had a experience where my toroidal field, do you know what that is? So or maybe...
I know what Kundalini is, but I don't know what a toroidal field is.
Yeah, something.
Go ahead.
Might not know what it is. So
yeah, for sure.
It's our electromagnetic field, and the toroid is a shape like a donut. So it's
Seen that. Where it goes
So it starts in our heart, and it's generated up and around, and it goes down as well and around. And so I was meditating in India at this 10-day Vipassana retreat, silent meditation retreat. And after the Kundalini awakening, suddenly a bubble popped up around my body. And I thought, my body is bigger than my body. That's interesting. And then I felt this sense, I heard like a whirring sound. And then I felt ecstatic bliss. And I was like, I wanted to go, oh, you know, but I couldn't because we were meditating. So inside I was doing these like, oh my God, this is what it is. This is samadhi. I thought I had read about samadhi and I experienced it.
Which is like enlightenment for people.
It's a taste of bliss and that ecstatic bliss state.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that moment, I continued meditating like 2 hours a day. The whole time I was traveling through India and up until this day, I still meditate. I don't meditate 2 hours a day, but I try to meditate twice a day, 20 minutes a day. And there's at a certain point, it just becomes part of your consciousness. You don't, you know, I'm aware of my breath. So I know when I'm not living in my heart and I immediately bring my breath into my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But even at age 21, Karen, I was very much in despair about the state of the planet. I was in despair about how humans treated each other.
Mm-hmm.
I felt this, you know, I'm a six planet Aquarian. I just have visions of holding hands with everybody and, you know, singing Kumbaya.
That's so nice. Makes the real world so much more painful, huh?
Hopefully less painful.
I mean, in comparison, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Age 21, that's when I began to read about the prophecies that we're living right now. And so I learned about the Kali Yuga. I learned about the Hopi prophecy and Mayan prophecies, many, many prophecies that I studied. And I thought, well, I want to survive. I did not come to Earth to shop and watch TV. I want to survive and be part of creating a new world because I'm an Aquarius. I have a vision of a better world.
Oh, that's a t-shirt right there. I didn't come to this world to shop and watch TV.
I've been saying that for years.
Amazing. Oh my God.
I didn't think of putting it on a t-shirt, but thank you for that. But I just, so after making the film and getting married and everything, and I unfortunately did not have children, I had to let that go. And then in my 50s, I was kind of like, okay, I know there's so much inside of me that wants to be expressed, but how do I earn the money to do it, you know, what I want to do? And my key theme, hence my name Dragonfly, is transformation of consciousness. And so I went I live by a lake and I was floating in the lake and I was asking the Great Spirit, okay, what am I supposed to do that is in alignment with my heart and soul that can earn me money? You know, because acting, you just never know when you're going to get a gig. And there's not as many gigs as I used to get. I used to be able to live on what I earned. Now they're just like once in a blue moon, I get an acting gig that pays, you know,
yeah,
a commercial or a movie or whatever. And so I was laying in the lake and then I heard, because I'm clairaudient, clairvoyant, I get messages and everything, get guidance. And I heard lead retreats. I was like, that's fantastic. Yes. And then I thought if I lead retreats, I can bring in theater. I can bring in writing. I can bring in music. I can bring in, you know, acting, filmmaking, photography, storytelling.
Right.
And transformation and meditation and spirituality and like clowning, for example, to bring it all in to give people a full experience. But then, of course, to create and lead retreats, you need an audience and you need people with deep pockets to pay for those retreats.
Yeah.
And then I thought, okay, that I'm not there yet. So I started leading women's circles and I had to overcome fear of persecution because when I was making my film, The Sacred Run, The Lotus and the Feather, you wouldn't believe how many people judged me. You're flaky, you're naive. The National Film Board of Canada said Mother Earth and peace is passé. I'm like, what? And I lost confidence when I was making my film.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going all over the place here, but
no, it's fine. We don't have to be chronological at all.
So when I was making my film, I actually became suicidal during the process because it was so difficult to get the funding. And I was so determined to finish it, but I was suffering because I thought, like, something's wrong with me. Like, nobody, like, people are judging me. I can't get the money. Like, I just was wanting to go back to the stars is what I kept saying. I'm not meant to be here on this earth. Like,
was that when you were in Japan or when you were prepping to go to Japan?
No, this is after Japan because I shot it. I lived in Japan teaching English.
Right, and you shot it then. Yeah.
Then I came back to Canada. And when I came back to Canada, I went into a depression and a serious, I became suicidal.
You're like, here I have this magical thing. I work so hard for it. It's amazing. And people were like, it's not that great.
Well, and to hear the National Film Board of Canada say, Mother Earth and Indigenous people's issues are passe. Thought, I need to go back to the stars because this planet's not ready for what I want to share. And nobody seems to value what's in my heart and soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then, you know, I went through my deconstruction, reconstruction period, which was deep, 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 deep healing. And I had to use many modalities, but mostly meditation because I couldn't afford to go to Omega. I couldn't afford to sign up for coaching or therapy or classes. So I did a lot of deep inner work and writing, journaling, meditating, dream, you know, and I read a lot that like books helped me a lot too. And I did Landmark Education, which have you heard of Landmark Education?
I have friends who've done Landmark. Yeah.
Well, that program helped me make my film. The day I remember going to my hairdresser's because I was in my editing room and I was also attracting men that were not treating me well. And I just thought, I'm on a train track. I'm going to hit the wall. Like this track I'm on is, I need a transformation. I remember saying out loud, I need a transformation. And then I went to get my hair done because that's what you do when you need a transformation.
Of course. I'm on the way. Actually, I called somebody yesterday.
And she said, how are you, Andrea? And I just started bawling my eyes out. And I said, I need a transformation. My life is a mess. And I was feeling so lacking confidence in my message, what I was doing. And she's the one that recommended going to Landmark.
Mm-hmm.
And I just began this healing journey. And what also came up, I was getting film roles, but I started getting film roles that were not good examples of women. I was raped. I was killed. I was in bondage. I was the rich lady who shoots someone and then gets killed. I had these really weird roles. I was even in a movie with David Bowie where he painted me with blood, Garen.
Was that a vampire movie? Is that the vampire movie that he's in?
Well, it was The Hunger, but it was a TV series. Not the original movie with Catherine Deneuve. It was a TV series. And I was in the first, like the launch episode, the first episode. And David Bowie played a controversial artist. This is so crazy. I was on a crucifix and I was bare-breasted with like a, you know, a little what Jesus wore, and I had a crown on my head, and I was on a crucifix, and he was portraying a controversial artist who was doing this, you know, playing with these icons that are very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was doing that role, I was channeling because I'm sort of a method actor. I'm a channeler, so I channeled the character, and I felt like I was channeling Jesus, and all I could think of was forgive them for they do not know. And right around that time that I was doing that healing, I was also discovering that I had been sexually abused as a child under age 4 and later on as well, because it was a pattern that continued. And I started doubting myself. I started feeling like I was shrinking, and I felt like I didn't have what it took to succeed.
Mm.
But the role with David Bowie came like literally the week after I finished working with a shaman because I physically fell apart at a certain point. My body couldn't stand anymore. And I was rolling around my apartment because I couldn't walk. And my friends would bring me food and the shaman would come every day to my house and work with me. And the shamanic journeying that she led me through really helped me and the punching the pillows and all the, you know, a bunch of releasing stuff. And all those things that I went through, now I help my clients with. And so I finished the, you know, that healing process with this role of being on the cross. But what's interesting is that because I had been sexually abused, I was attracting roles where the woman was sexually abused.
I mean, truthfully, it's not hard to find roles where the woman is sexually abused.
Exactly. Or killed or strangled or something, you know, violence, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I was attractive. So, and they put me in these roles where, you know, but I needed to heal that wound. And I did. And then when I was feeling, you know, in that whole journey, I also read The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And I started honoring my sensitivity because I'm a Pisces moon and I feel the pain of the whole world. And I'm sensitive and I cry all the time. And I just feel so much. And Eckhart Tolle gave me the permission, like, it's okay to feel your emotions. Like, that's a superpower.
Isn't that crazy that somehow we think we need permission for that because we're so shamed for it? I think the reason that people get shamed for being emotional or sharing emotions is that other people feel it, but they're trying so hard to keep it under wraps that when you don't keep it under wraps, that's a threat to them.
You're absolutely right, Karen. And we've been living in a patriarchal society for at least 5,000 years that doesn't, you know, that it's like you do not show your emotions.
Right. Which is very harmful to men as well as women. Just want to point out patriarchy hurts men too.
Of course, the patriarchy. I know a man who committed suicide and he was a fire chief. But, you know, he had a lot of pain, but he had to be strong and he obviously couldn't, you know, express it.
Right.
So this whole journey has been so interesting because, like you said, there's been the transformation thread, transformation piece, just wanting to make the world better. But when I did the healing, I was able to finish the film and then I met my husband. But the shift that when I was floating in the lake and like lead retreats, then I had to overcome my fear of persecution when I was like leading women's circles. I know I'm a past life regressionist as well. So, and I've experienced many past lives where, you know, in one I was a healer and, you know, lived in the woods and got killed and strangled or burnt. And so in this culture that we live in that still thinks the tarot cards are of the devil, which they are not, and they still think, you know, you have to go through a priest to have a conversation.
I think they're from the printer, not from the devil, right? Sorry, couldn't resist. Anyhow, go on.
I love your sense of humor.
Hi, it's Karen. I wanted to remind you guys to go to secondwindwomen.com/community-offers to see all the offers from our guests for free meetups, discounts on products, consults, etc. So do check that out. And don't forget that we are here to support you. We can help you with Google ads, websites, Facebook and Instagram ads, Google reviews. There's so many digital ways we can support your business, and we're happy to help. Just reach out to me and my team.
Because of my Aquarian nature, I want us all to hold hands and be brothers and sisters, and I just want everybody to like me, and I want to like everybody. So I have this deep, deep fear of persecution. And my first women's circle, I sprained my ankle so I wouldn't have to do it. But my friend luckily said, I'll help you, and we got through it. But I did experience judgment from friends who, like, who do you think you are, leading women? Mm-hmm. Like, it was weird, you know?
Yeah.
And then I gained more confidence. I healed that wound, my sister wound. And then I was like, okay, now I'm ready to be a coach. And I wanted to be a transformational coach because I feel like I'm a multidimensional being and you can't just heal from a talking therapy. It's not right. To just do talking therapy. For me, it wasn't. And for most people, because we store emotions in our body, you have to do somatic. You have to connect with your soul. You have to connect with spirit, you connect with earth, you get support from beyond the limited human self, right?
So would you say that's the definition of a transformational coach? What would you say is, if someone asks you, what's the definition of a transformational coach? I mean, it seems obvious, but I'm sure you have a more deep answer.
Yeah, I would say it is on a multidimensional level. So it's not just like taking action in the 3D world, but it's about, I do a lot of guided journeys. I do movement and mudras and breath work and somatic work because it's, yeah, multidimensional. We're not just talking about the head, the mind, what you need to do to take the next step, because underlying those actions you take, if you haven't healed your trauma or you lack confidence or you doubt yourself, then it makes it very hard to do the action in alignment. So transformational coaching is about sustainable transformation, not just like, you know, okay, we're going to get a project done and that's that. It really changes, transforms the whole person's consciousness. It's about transformation of consciousness.
Okay.
And remembering that you're not just human. You're also an infinite soul being who came here for a reason. And culture doesn't support, you know, meditation, for example, is, you know, how I've really connected.
Depends on who in the culture you're talking to. I mean, you know, we're not homogenous, but I know what you're saying.
But in when I came back from India, I wanted to teach meditation, and a lot of people said, well, you know, that's not my religion. I'm like, it's not a religion. It's a tool. It's a technique to raise your consciousness. And so, yeah, so transformational coach is a full transformation. And one of the programs that I do, that I lead, is called Activate, Align, Ascend. And that's a 12-week chakra program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mind-blowing how much the women change, transform in that course. Even like by week 4, things are happening because it's a potent container where we meet weekly. Mm-hmm. And every energy center is connected to a phase of growth. So if you were not loved as a child, or in my case, I was sexually abused, I didn't feel okay. I thought something was wrong with me. I didn't have that unconditional love. Not many of us do get that unconditional love. If you do, you're very, very lucky to have parents who love you unconditionally.
Are you working with people in person, or are these remote where you're meeting?
I do both. I do both. I have mostly my private clients are online, so, and they're all over the world, so it's great. And I sometimes, you know, travel, so it's great to have work online. But for example, somatic breath work is best to do in person, and I combine it with Reiki as well, and I call in my angels and my guides and the ancestors, and so it's a much more, you know, it's a real in person experience. Past life regression, I could do it online as well, you know, but I like to be there for the person laying on the couch. Like, it's a deep process, but I have done it online as well. And I love to lead retreats. I've just led day retreats, and I am getting to the big dream that the Great Spirit said to me, lead retreats. But right now I'm building my coaching business and building my programs. Mm-hmm. And you know, that when I was laying in the lake, I was like realizing, like what you just said, like everything I've ever done, there's always been this underlying thread of fascination with how do we transform our consciousness to live sustainably in balance on earth? How do we, you know, heal? We have to heal before we can really experience that. The wholeness of
take
being
the sty out of your own eye before you take it out of your brother's eye, right? It's like a Bible verse or something.
Say that again?
Take the sty out of your own eye before you, it's like put on your mask first in the airplane, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what, you know, here I was making a film. I had a, you know, vision of like, let's run for peace. And we're all running to carry the message that all life is sacred. But during the sacred run, 5 women kept stabbing me in the back, and they were mean. And I was like, what? Like, we're together. We're running for peace. Why are you sisters stabbing me in the back? But it was the sister wound. I was bullied in school. I had a lot of sister wounding. You know, I have a lot of very, very good friends as well.
Yeah.
But I did have a lot of bullying in school.
High school is rough when you're a girl.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in the patriarchy, right? You know, for a woman, it's all competition and, you know, stabbing people in the back. And so I had to heal that. And now I'm just in this phase where I'm, you know, I'm teaching meditation. I'm teaching about the chakras. I'm bringing all the tools that help me to help my clients.
Right.
And the way I help them is I help them remember who they are on a soul level. I help them remember who they are. If they need to do healing around inner child, we do inner child healing, whatever the issue. If there's sexual abuse, that's another way to heal. If someone's going through grief, that's another way. If someone suffers from anxiety, I help them develop tools to deal with their, you know. And now I'm feeling kind of a call to, well, do podcasts, which is, I'm honored. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I think there's an energy of collaboration that we're shifting in the 20 years of Pluto and Aquarius. You know, the energies are changing. And the other energy and theme of Pluto and Aquarius for the next 20 years or 19 years, I guess now, is about balancing the masculine and feminine. And so I'm working with another transformational coach, Sean Dutoy from our Thrive Academy. And we're creating a program around balancing the masculine and the feminine energies. And so I'm still wanting to do retreats, but you know, it does take, you have to build your foundation before you can really, you know, market those big retreats.
Seems like you're very comfortable taking a lot on.
I'm passionate. I'm multi-passionate, and especially with what's going on in the world. And we just left the Kali Yuga. Are you familiar, or is your audience?
I have a master's degree in Buddhist studies, and Kali Yugas are supposed to last a very long time. So I've never had any teachers that were like, they're always like the upcoming Kali Yuga, because the Kali Yuga, according to Tibetan Buddhism, is like way worse than what we got going on here, unless you're talking about being in a war zone.
Well, that's interesting. What I heard was that in March this year that we left the Kali Yuga and that we're now in the Dvapara age. So we're...
Depends on
I'm
who
going, to, I'm going to go guess. With that.
Okay, go with it. Go with it.
Because... even if we're thousands of years off, or it helps me feel hopeful.
Positive framing. Yeah.
Because we're now in an ascension, according to this famous astrologer who's a Vedic astrologer, Indian astrologer. And he wrote about that we left the Kali Yuga in March. And then recently with the three eye atlas that's flying through our...
What is the deal with that? It's so funny. I have only heard about that on TikTok.
Really?
Yeah. That's the only place I've ever heard about. I know you were, did you already do that talk?
I did. I did a talk about it because we don't know if it's a comet, or it doesn't behave like a comet. It doesn't fully look like a comet. There's a lot of anomalies about it. Like it's speeding up, slowing down, changing color. There's all kinds of people saying all kinds of things. It's hard to know what the truth is. But what I do know is that there's something very special, very sacred about it to me. And I remembered the Hopi prophecy, which I studied when I was 21, was there's the ninth prophecy is that the blue star Kachina is going to come, our celestial sign. And the three eye atlas actually turned blue. And so all the Hopi prophecies have manifested. And this could be the ninth sign. We'll see what, you know, how it evolves. We'll see what happens. I really feel that it's a sign from the cosmos, from the celestial, our star brothers, star sisters. And it's a sign to wake up. And it's a sign about we're leaving the fourth world and we're shifting into the fifth world, which is the Hopi prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I attended a sacred water gathering, when I showed my film, it was all Indigenous people came together to talk about water. Mm-hmm. Water is life, and how to talk to water, give thanks.
Water rights is huge. Yeah.
Yes. And we were invited to share at the end of the conference what we were taking away. And a woman got up and started talking, an Indigenous young woman in her 20s. And I was journaling, and her voice changed in the middle of her talking, and my head whipped up because I was like, what? It sounded so different, Karen. It was a channel, and I had never witnessed someone channeling like that before. Mm. And her face started twitching, and her voice changed, and she said, I am water. You are water. Everything is water. If you do not change, I will crack you open. And I thought, that was Gaia. She just channeled Gaia. Mm. And we're seeing what's happening to the earth. She's cracking us open. And we do really need to be aware, not to set people in fear. I do not want to live in fear. What I'm saying is we need to wake up and lead from our hearts, live from our heart center, and remember our connection to Mother Earth and to Source. And remember that we're infinite souls, and that we came here at this time to help create a new paradigm, a new earth, mm-hmm. a new consciousness. And it's happening. It is happening. But there's also this polarity. The old, you know, the old doesn't want to let go of the power. So they're like, the beast is trying to hold on. But there's so many good things that are happening now.
There's a lot of amazing things, and you just don't hear about them that much. It's so easy to fall into despair or, you know, homogenizing yours and others' experience, going like, oh, it's just the same as it has always been, which isn't true. But it's just easy to gloss over, because there's a great story about these two monks that are like walking down the street. And one of them looks over and they see an oak tree. And there's also a letter that is tree. The name of the letter is tree. And one monk turns to the other one and he's like, they call that a tree. And they both start laughing, because have you ever seen two trees that look the same? You know, right? But we have this because actual experience can be so intense, we tend to homogenize it, which really is to our detriment, I think, a lot of the time.
Well, it's, you know, we've been marinating in the patriarchal way of living, which is logic, the emotions, the soul. A lot of people don't even think they have a soul. Like, they're like, no, I live and I die. And or they don't see that they're an infinite being for a sacred purpose. We didn't come here just to make more things and buy more things.
Would you say shop and
watch TV? I mean, we're creative co-creators. What is kind of disturbing, but not surprising since we're 20 years into Aquarius with Pluto, is transhumanism. There's that happening with AI and artificial intelligence, robots. But we must not forget our humanity and our spiritual, that we're spiritual beings. And it's not going to make our life better. Well, for some people, like if you can't see or you can't walk, then that could, there's, you know, AI, artificial intelligence, and it's a useful tool. Mm-hmm. But there are people in the world that have a lot of deep pockets who want us to get a chip put in us. And they don't want us to use computers. They just want us everything to be inside. And I will never, ever, ever say yes to that. And I think there's a danger that many people will be seduced by that. So that's why I'm on a mission to help people remember that you're a soul.
I love what you're saying about like leading from your heart. I mean, no matter how religious you are, no matter how pragmatic or atheist you are, that's a powerful message.
Yes. And the whole, thank goodness, like the heart math coherence is becoming more popular, that you know, they did EKG studies where if a person's stressed out, it's they're in their heads, and like their EKG for the heart and the head are all wonky. But as soon as you breathe into your heart, there's a coherence, and suddenly you get answers. You feel joy. You feel peace. You're able to sit in silence. And our world, unfortunately, is so bombarded by information that many people don't know how to sit in silence. And that's where we get guided. That's where we receive wisdom from our higher soul or from spirit, angels, guides. I don't know. I hear a voice sometimes that guides me, you know. It's like, but if you don't, people want to be, if you don't meditate, you don't benefit.
I've heard some, they did some scientific studies, and I don't know, I don't remember if it was school age children now compared to school age children before the internet, but they said, I think it was a New York Times article, something about the value of being bored.
Yes, it was. I just listened to that in a video about people who, the psychology of people who grew up in the 70s. And they were saying that being bored was a good thing for us because it made us have to use our own, you know, ingenious ways of entertaining ourselves. Like, I'm sure for your family, was it the same? Your parents go out and play and come back at dark.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't go far enough so that you can't hear us.
Right. We experience the world in a different way that children are now.
Yeah.
And it's, I really am so grateful that I experienced an analog world so that I know how to sit in silence. And also my meditation practice has helped me a lot with that. Because that can, you know, cause people stress. Like, oh, I can't meditate because, you know, I can't stop thinking. Yeah, well, that's the nature of your mind.
Oh my God.
The more you meditate, the more you can find moments of that space.
That just kills me. That just kills. I see so many people, and every time we talk about meditation, they're like, I'm not good at meditation. That's not the point. The point is not being good at it. You don't become, you know, expert, pass the meditation test. Ding.
Exactly. It's like anything. If you want to master it, you have to practice it, and you got to show up and keep doing it. But it's, you know, just for your audience, I'm sure your audience, a lot of people maybe meditate, but if there are people who want to and are having trouble, it's really, you know, just a tip I can give is that think of a train that's, and your thoughts are like trains. And when you watch a train, if you watch a train, you're like, oh, you know, your head's going back and forth like a ping pong, you know, a tennis match. But we know how to zone out and just look at the center. And then it becomes a blur. That's how our thoughts, the thoughts train. Often I say that train left the station when I can't remember what I was going to say. It's like, oh, that train left the station. Because, you know, our thoughts carry us to another thought and another thought. And we worry about the future and we don't eat. We're sitting in a beautiful
house. That's a great analogy. I love that.
It helps me a lot. And breathing fully into the belly. When you do this more and more and more, it just becomes the way you live. And the beauty of it is you start to experience synchronicities. You start to receive guidance. You start to have a communication with Mother Earth, and you start to like receive feathers or, you know, there's joy. It's not like just a bunch of trees that are green or whatever. They're all, no, the trees are alive. The animals are alive. The trees are brothers and sisters. And when I was going through my healing period, people were letting me down. I didn't have much luck with human beings. Mm. But what supported me was I would lean in against a tree and I would talk to that tree. And that tree would, you know, it's not like obviously, but it would be a telepathic communication.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind. Indigenous wisdom is so profound. And I really feel that the combination, like I've always been on a spiritual path, but I'm so grateful that on my way to India, I met an Indigenous person and I was invited to the Medicine Wheel gathering in 1990. 1990. And I it was the first medicine wheel gathering they had ever opened up to other people than the indigenous people. And they had been banned from doing it for many hundreds of years.
In India?
No. With American Indians in Canada, indigenous people in Canada.
First Nation people.
First yeah. Nation people in Canada. And that, I literally fell on the ground with understanding that it's not just Mother Goose, you know, the concept of Mother Goose, right? That's what I grew up with, Mother Nature. She's alive. The trees are alive. All of nature is alive and water is sentient. The indigenous people taught me to sing to water. You know, it's what we're in this phase now where it's not just about up here and, you know, going to heaven. It's about we need to be like a rainbow bridge between heaven and earth. And we're like these rainbow bridges and we are going to be guided to go to certain parts of the earth because we are walking medicine. Our energy is we're these walking energetic beings. And when we live from our hearts, in the centered in our hearts, we're like these beacons of light. And a lot of people don't know they're a beacon of light. They don't feel that. But you have to go in the dark and you have to go down in the ground to pull the light. It's like Persephone and, you know, Pluto and going into the underworld to find the life within yourself.
Right.
And once you've found the light within yourself, just one little thing that's coming up that I wanted to share is after reading The Power of Now, and I was allowing myself to feel, and I was like crying, and it was raining outside. I was up on a porch, and it was nighttime. I was crying and crying and crying. I'm crying for myself. I'm crying for heartbreak. I'm crying. Then I started crying for the earth. I started crying for the people. I started crying for the animals. I started crying for the water, the oceans, the state of the world. Then something happened, Karen, that I still don't know to this day how this happened. But I allow myself to cry. And then suddenly I was traveling through space really fast. Like I had this perception that I was like flying through space and I could see planets whipping by. And then I exploded. And I felt the same samadhi that I felt when I was 29.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 40 at this time you go up and down, right? And so at 40, I had this feeling of exploding. I had been feeling suicidal. And ever since that, I'm like, I will never feel depressed again because I know who I am. And I'm we're not just these physical beings. We're not, you know, trying to be perfect all the time. It's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
We just gotta love ourselves and love each other.
So how can people get in touch with you? How can people learn about your retreats and more about how you work with people?
Yeah, so they can go to my LinkedIn is Andrea Sadler Coach. And I do I have a Bitly link for it's Luminous Dragonfly Coaching under Bitly. Where'd you go? There you go.
So bit.ly/luminousdragonflycoaching?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Or on Facebook, I'm Andrea Sadler on Facebook as well. LinkedIn is probably good. You know, they can find me there as well. So
thanks so much for coming in today. It's such a powerful and magical story. And I just love all the different, you know, art and energy ways that you transform yourself and others.
Thank you. Well, you're a kindred soul because you're also a creative and artist and performer. And so I love that, you know, we share that.
What's the name of your podcast?
I don't have a podcast yet. I don't have a podcast yet, but it's, I'm working on it. It's in the
basket with all the other things. Well, awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today, Andrea.
And one more thing. On Facebook, I have a group called Dragonfly Sistership. So it's specifically for women, and it's called Dragonfly Sistership. So that's an easy way. You can just join there. And then in about 2 weeks, if you have male audience, I'm starting with Sean. It's the Wholeness Sanctuary, Restoring the Masculine and the Feminine. We have a Facebook group that's going to be launching in about 2 weeks.
Great. awesome.
Thank you so much, Kara.
Yeah, so many ways to connect.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andrea.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Wow, that was so much fun. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. We'll see you next time on Second Wind Women. Let's make your second wind the strongest yet. Thanks.